processes. And if there's nothing else you got out of today, it's to realize that learning is not just for when you're in school. You could be a grown, successful, accomplished adult, and there's still opportunities to listen and learn. You should take advantage of them. So I want to tell you a little bit about my story. I think I shared this at the Jed Talk, but it's a new crop each year. So I want to tell you about my story. It's not really an emotionally dramatic, moving story, but maybe it's not what you predict, knowing who I am now. And I want to share it with you as a challenge to consider your story as your story, all of our stories continue to be written. What the next chapter is. What do I mean? And it really relates to what I just started with. So many people in life, momentum just carries us forward. Right? We're placed on a trajectory, usually by our parents, by the choice of what preschool we go to, what community we live in, what friends we make. And that trajectory that we're placed on very early in our life continues to just play out. This leads to that, that leads to the other leads to the other. And most people don't ever stop. They don't press pause in their life and say, hey, is this who I am? Is this who I want to be? Is that where I want to go? Where do I see myself? And what's the best route to get there? Instead, it's just momentum that carries us. I want to be with the cool kids. The cool kids wear this, listen to this, talk like that, go there. I want to be with the jock. I want to be with the nerd. I want to be with the whatever group, whatever clique, whatever angle I have. Well, then that's just what you wear, what you listen to, how you talk. That's your fashion. That's your level of observance. That's how seriously or not seriously you take your Judaism. If that's who I want to fit in with, that's what just kind of automatically happens on its own. The notion of pressing pause, the notion of being self-reflective, the notion of challenging ourselves and saying, who am I? Not just the composite of what's around me. I'm not just not the result of whatever the style, the fashion, the fad of the time is, but who am I and who do I want to be? What am I and how do I want to get there? Now, you live in an age, even more than when I was your age, that there's an emphasis on individuality and individual expression and be true to yourself and just be yourself and so on and so forth. But even within that, I will challenge you that there's an incredible amount of conformity taking place. You're just conforming to what's popular, what's stylish, what's in. Not necessarily listening to what you want to listen to, or watching what you want to watch, or dressing how you want to dress. You're just conforming. Right? I've even said in shul several times, like, there's certain fashions. I look back at my 8th grade yearbook or 12th grade yearbook, and I laugh hysterically at what we thought was cool then. And you will look back at your yearbook, and this is a word of caution, be careful what you choose to wear in your yearbook picture, unless you want to look back and laugh, you'll laugh hysterically, right? So whether the fact that boys are now wearing skin-tight pants that look like they were spray-painted on and require a crowbar to get out of, that have elastic at the bottom that stop 2 inches above your shoes with no socks, you look like morons. You'll excuse me. Absolute morons. But that's what's in. That's what's in. I go buy new suits. And they're like, so this is like tight for me. My kids are like, why are you wearing such loose pants? You look like an idiot. I say, I want to be comfortable. That's much more important to me, being comfortable, than having to fit in for the next 3 years, because in 5 years, you'll have to wear baggy, loose bell bottoms again, and that will be it. So fashion is just one example, and really it's a very superficial, external, petty example, because who cares? So you're fitting into the fashion, or you're making your own fashion. The point is, there's conformity going on all around us. It's going on all around us. And what I think to lead the most meaningful, purposeful, to lead the most authentic life is not just to be the composite result of the people around you. To watch, listen, dress, go, participate in everything. Whether that's going to that party, or experimenting with that substance, or wearing the ridiculous fashion, or listening to the music you don't even like, that's what everyone listens to and sings, or do whatever the conformity is, I think the most meaningful life. And I will even argue, by the way, that I think that others respect you the most when you don't need to conform and fit in, is being true to ourselves. And being true to ourselves means figuring out, with real self-reflection, with real mindfulness, with real self-awareness, with real emotional intelligence, who am I? What do I really believe is true? Who do I want to be? How do I want to be remembered? And where do I want to be? So I grew up like you, my Orthodox family, maybe some of you know my parents that live in our community now, and whenever they are now is where we were then, maybe even less so, as their children maybe got more religious, maybe they did. I didn't go to shul on Sundays when we were off from school, but I might fill in, and I wasn't the first one at shul, even on Shabbos. And I'm not going to confess this isn't a professional booth and tell you all the important details of my childhood, but I went to Yavne Academy in Pronounce, New Jersey, which is a co-ed modern Orthodox elementary school. I went to Frisch. How many of you heard of Frisch in Brown's? So you know Frisch. I graduated Frisch. Many of your teachers were there. But I went to Frisch. And again, I was a typical kid in a typical school, much like yours. And I engaged in and participated in and wasn't always the most observant and obedient and so on. And my life took a radical change from the trajectory I was on in 11th grade. 11th grade in Frisch, there was a class trip to Boston. I took a bus to Boston, toured Boston, the sites, the historical sites, what there was to see in Boston. Thank God we didn't go to Fenway. And we came back to New York. For some reason, I don't know how it turned out, in my 11th grade, in my junior year, there were no staff members, no Judaic staff members from the school who were able to participate in chaperoning the trip. So it was parents, and it was some of the staff members who taught in the secular side of the, that doesn't mean to say anything about them, but it gives you a sense of the orientation of where they were coming from. On the way back, we had a full day, so the bus was driving back late at night with an anticipated arrival very late at night. So it was getting late, it was a long drive from Boston back to Bergen County, New Jersey, and we stopped at a rest stop. And at that rest stop, it's an amazing thing to be able to in life, look back on your life and pick a moment in time that changed the trajectory of your life. That moment may have happened to you, that may not yet have happened to you, but either way, you won't be aware of it unless you're looking for it, unless you're open to it, unless you're willing to experience it. So 11th grade, bus is coming back, we stop at a rest stop, and some of the kids get back on the bus, there's a Burger King at the rest stop, and they get back on the bus, not with a Diet Coke from Burger King, they get back on the bus with fries from Burger King and other foods from Burger King, outright plain, non-kosher food. Now again, where were the chaperones who on this Orthodox trip of 11th graders to kind of call them out or to say you can't bring that back on or you shouldn't be eating that? It's an excellent question, not sure where they were, but the bottom line is kids who I grew up with, came from very similar backgrounds as mine. I'm not talking about kids who grew up eating non-kosher in their home or out of it. I'm talking about kids who grew up in Tunic, New Jersey, went to B'nai Yeshurim, who grew up with the same background, the same attitude, parents who had the same expectations of them. Even though we flirted with crossing certain lines and we did certain things, one of the red lines that we didn't cross was even truth, outright truth. And French fries from Burger King are cooked in an oil with the same thing that, without getting into the Yoredeya halachic details of it, not that I was so aware of it then, but it was outright truth. I don't remember any kid getting on with a cheeseburger, but they didn't come back with a Diet Coke and a snack and a wrapper from Burger King. They came back with trafe that they ordered and, you know, opened the microphone at Burger King. And I remember, it must have been 11 o'clock at night, maybe even later, I remember seeing some of these kids and being shocked. Again, I had gone to events with them, maybe we shouldn't have been at. I had cut them into that school with them, maybe we shouldn't have cut them into better play ball in the gym. I wasn't telling you that I was the most righteous kid in the school, but that was a red line. Eating treif, eating non-kosher. And the reason that was a pivotal moment in my life is, and I thank God for this, that I could have looked the other way, I could have not noticed, I could have not cared, I could have fallen asleep, I could have taken out my huge Discman and put on these bulky headphones and gone back to listening to music. I was the coolest kid for my bar mitzvah, I got the first Discman. It was like this huge, no CDs, no good headphones. Anyway, but I didn't. I saw this kid, they came back on the bus, and for some reason, I was outraged. And I challenged him, which may have been foolish, because I ended up taking on half the bus, and for the rest of the bus ride, it was basically the entire bus against me. But I basically said, guys, what's going on? Like, we all flirt with the rules, bend the rules, don't keep all the rules, but this is a red line rule. Like, we don't need treif. What's going on? And they turned to me and said something I will never forget. They said, you're a total hypocrite. Who are you fooling? You bend the rules, and we're bending the rules. What makes your right or license to bend the rules your way better than ours? Once you're not keeping all the rules, who are you to tell us which rules to keep and which rules not? So it's either real or it's not real, and if you're willing to bend some rules and not really keeping the system, you don't really buy into it, then who are you to sit in judgment and to be critical of the rules that we're bending? And we debated and we argued, and of course, you know, I happen to be a little competitive and I like to debate, and so even if it's a position which I don't necessarily believe entirely, I can advocate for it. So I argued with the rest of the bus ride why treif and non-kosher is different than cutting mincha than doing this, and why it was wrong. You know what happened to me? I came home from that bus ride and I couldn't sleep. Not that night, not the next night. And in 11th grade, I looked in the mirror, literally and figuratively, and I said to myself, they're right and I'm wrong. They just called me out. And they're right in the way that they called me out. Why do I have a right to be outraged by the line that they crossed if I've taken on my own lines and I'm willing to cross them? Who makes their lines worse than mine or my lines better than theirs? And the rest of my 11th grade, this was halfway through junior year, the rest of 11th grade, I was on this journey of reading every book I could read. There was no internet at the time. You couldn't Google, you weren't downloading podcasts, or listening to Shia, there was no Y.E. Torah. I was busy reading every book that I could read that would talk to me about the deeper meaning of Judaism. Is there evidence for God's existence? How do we know that the Torah is true? How do we know God's expectations of us? How do we know there's really a relationship with Him? How do we know He really cares about these minutiae and these details that seem so unimportant? How do we forge our identity and who we are? And I spent the rest of 11th grade really asking myself, I don't want to be a clown, I don't want to be a joke, I don't want to be a hypocrite, I want to be real. So, which is it? I was either going to go off of Dera and stop being religious altogether, because the whole thing is not real, it's man-made, it's fake, it's an illusion, or I was going to take it seriously, explore it, take it, and take myself seriously. I had a very instrumental Rebbe in 11th grade, who Rebbe Kohl was going to work with, my heart star, who I spent time not only in the class. The first half of 11th grade, I was the clown, and I gave him a hard time, and I had no interest in learning, I tried to distract the class. By the second half of 11th grade, he and I were learning, not only in Shir in the morning, but outside of class as well, and I have tremendous hakaras hatov. I feel very indebted to him to this day. But I spent the rest of 11th grade taking myself much more seriously, reading, exploring, learning, and thinking. And it pivoted my entire life. It pivoted my entire life from the trajectory I was on. It changed what I did after 11th grade, what I did that summer. I don't want to get into details. I had been going to a certain camp, and I was very social in that camp, and I won't say I was popular, but I had a fun time in that camp, and it changed. I went to a different direction the summer after 11th grade. And my 12th grade, in Frisch, they created a Masmidim Shir. They took kids from 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, who were more serious, more interested, and they, even though we were across grades, we had what they called the Masmidim Shir, and I was in that group, which was a huge decision. When you, as you know, are a high school student, and you're kind of pigeonholing yourself into a certain, that's a big decision. That's a big decision that that's the crowd you're running with. That's how you want to be known. That's who you want to be. It changed the schools I was considering to go to for my year in Israel, and it changed my entire life. If you meet people from Teaneck, New Jersey, who knew me from pre-K through the middle of 11th grade, they will tell you none of us thought Ephraim Goldberg was going to be a rabbi. He was going to be writing Divrei Torah, giving shiurim. Again, it's not that I was a drug dealer on the corner. It's not that I was kicked out from school to school to school. I don't want to make it like it's much worse than it was. But I will tell you that I was the typical disaffected, disillusioned, uninspired, going through the motions, barely kind of kid. And then it all changed in 11th grade because of that night, because of that bus ride, because of those conversations. They changed my life. And they continue to change my life because the set of questions that I told you that I asked that day and for the rest of that year are the set of questions that I continue to ask myself every single day. What guides me is asking myself, if I believe in God, and I'm happy to come back in another time we can talk about what I think are many pieces of evidence for God's existence, and I believe that He has expectations of us, 613 of them, He gave it to us in the form of the Torah, and another time we can talk about all the pieces of evidence that support. There's no such thing as a proof. There's no proof of anything. There's no proof that the lunch that you're provided for from Katashiv High School today doesn't have a place to be eaten anyway. There's no proof when you walk across the street that you don't have an optical illusion getting run over by a car, but you cross the street anyway. There's no proof that when you drive your car, the brakes are going to work. Every day we make a million decisions a day without having any proof. How do we make the decisions based on a preponderance of evidence? Every decision. From the pill that you pop because you believe the pharmacy is out to make you better and not kill you, to the food that you eat in the restaurant, the belief that we're not going to harm you, to crossing the street, the belief that there's an optical illusion, everything in life, we make decisions based on preponderance of evidence. Nothing in our lives do we make a decision based on proof. Even the things that you think are proven, in medicine and science, prestigious to your much smarter science teachers will tell you, science is always evolving and changing, and what was a proof yesterday has been disproven today. So we make decisions. The practical, real decisions we make in our life every single day are not made based on proofs. They're made based on overwhelming preponderance of evidence. And the same amount of evidence that supports the notion that you can take the medicine you got at the pharmacy, the food that you got at the restaurant, that you can cross the street, and that you can believe that the brakes in your car are going to work, the same amount of evidence that supports that is available to, same amount of evidence to support that there is a God, that he has a relationship with us, that he gave us his Torah, that he has expectations of us. All those pieces of evidence, happy to examine another time. But the bottom line is, if one subscribes to that, if you examine that evidence and you conclude that it's true, it can't help but change your life, to take yourself more seriously. And my challenge to you is, you're beginning your senior year, right? It's half a year later than it happened to me, but it's never too late. There are people who are going through this process, like we go to Friday Night Live at 70 and 80 and 90 years old. It is absolutely never too late to begin this process of looking in the mirror and saying, who am I? And who do I want to be? And how do I want to be remembered? Where do I want to go? And what's the best way I'm going to get there? You're in 12th grade, but it's not too early to talk about, what do you want your Shabbos table to look like? Who do you want to be sitting on the other end of it? What do you want your children's lifestyle to look like? You want children who are going to go to Jewish day school? When children are going to keep Shabbos and kosher? Do you want to constantly only go to shul because there's a social pressure that you get nothing out of it, so you come late, you leave early, you talk all the time in there, you take a break in the middle to have a l'chaim because you have to numb yourself to the experience of going to shul because it's so miserable for you? It's not too early in 12th grade to be thinking about what do you want the rest of your life to look like? Because the decisions you're going to make this year and the path that you're going to put yourself on, to a large degree, are going to determine who you surround yourself by, what schools you consider going to, what you're looking to get out of it, whether you'll go for a gap year to Israel, what college campuses, and what the Jewish life is like there. There are many, many, many. I end up doing a lot of the cleanup work after the fact. But you know, the path is paved with good intentions, but it doesn't always lead there. So there are many people who went to places, college campuses, for example, who didn't intend on meeting that non-Jewish counterpart, who didn't intend on falling in love with the non-observant counterpart. And you know what? Their Shabbos table and their children and their lifestyle looks nothing like what they imagined and dreamt it always would. Not only what their parents and grandparents and great-grandparents risked their lives for them to have, I'm not going to lay on the guilt, but even that they themselves imagined it always would. And because we have cognitive dissonance, because in life we never want to live with the misery of disappointing ourselves, we just pretend that we adjusted our expectations. That was never really me, this is the real me, that was foolish and stupid of me, this is what I really want now. No, you know the real you, and you know the life you're meant to lead. And you know the trajectory and the path that you're meant to be on. And I don't mean to scare you or put too much pressure on you, but as you begin your senior year, these are things to be thinking about. These are things to be thinking about. Not radical overnight changes to your life that will never last. Not radical overnight changes that are superficial or inauthentic and counterfeit, and they don't really represent or reflect anything that's real. But I mean grappling with these kinds of questions. That unfortunately, through 12 years of Jewish education, due to no fault, you have the privilege of going to an absolutely incredible school with amazing administrators and teachers who are so devoted to you. It's not this school's fault, it's the entire system. But we get through the system and we never ask these questions. How do you know that there's a God? Does he love you? Does he know what you're doing? Does he care about you? What does he expect from you? What are your responsibilities to him? Why are we here on this earth? What are we meant to accomplish? What are we meant to achieve? What is the source of real happiness? It's an amazing thing. For the first time in a long time, our generation has the luxury of being so focused on our happiness. We didn't have that luxury for a long time. Our ancestors did not have the luxury of being focused on happiness. Why? What were they focused on? They're focused on surviving, right? Avoiding the pogrom or the Cossack or the Holocaust or the Inquisition or the expulsion, looking for the opportunity to have a job they won't get fired from every Friday. We live in this free world of prosperity, religious freedom. We have the greatest Jewish life ever, and it's killing us. It's absolutely killing us. It's killing us. I know somebody whose grandfather was a Holocaust survivor said that a Nazi told him in a death camp that in Israel, in Palestine, the Arabs will take care of the Jews. In Europe, we're taking care of the Jews, and in America, the Jews will take care of themselves. Very precious, very prophetic words. It's happening statistically. The Jews are taking care of ourselves. Why? Because a healthy dose of anti-Semitism, which we don't want or welcome or invite, God forbid,